Welcome today to our interview series with outstanding professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Vivek Thomas, President, Maximizer, and top-ranking global executive. Vivek, thank you for sharing your deep experiences with our audience.
Thank you very much for having me, Stephen. This is a great opportunity for both myself as well as Maximizer Software.
Now, Vivek, you're a global expert in CRM, so can you answer some of these questions are on CRM? And the first one being, how is CRM technology changing, and what does the business owner need to be aware of?
Well, CRM was originally built as a database repository for contacts. Over the years, it has evolved into a collaborative application that is at the core of any business's customer engagement model. Business owners need to embrace the efficacy this technology brings to their implementation of customer acquisition, customer retention, and customer development strategies. CRM is now about an amalgamation of the people that implement CRM and use CRM, the processes a business undertakes to engage with customers and prospects, and the technology that sits around, that is the underlying model around all of these processes.
How has the amount of IT resources needed to support a CRM solution changed during the past 10 years?
So that's a big question. I mean, it certainly has changed in two large ways. On the one hand, there's a significant reduction in hardware costs. You know, things like storage, memory, processing speed, etc., have all reduced in cost in the last 10 years and have spawned what we term as a virtualization model, where the overall cost of running an infrastructure to support front-end applications like CRM has come down. So on the one hand, there's that saving. On the other hand, the developments in things like open source and web applications have actually made things like cloud computing possible. And cloud computing has changed the way business licensing works or software licensing works. And that, again, has made it easier to deploy across organizations. So an organization can use a best-of-practice CRM model incorporated into its cloud computing application and push it out to all remote users around the world so that the same best practice standards are maintained in any customer engagement opportunity.
Now, Vivek, you sort of talked about where CRM is in, today, like where it's situated today and where the technology is today. But where do you see this heading in the future?
So a couple of things are happening. And first and foremost, we are seeing a significant resurgence of what used to be the timeshare model in IT infrastructure resources being cut up and distributed around many, many users. So we're certainly seeing a resurgence of that. Cloud computing, data storage costs, all of these things have led to that. And almost all major players are in the business of selling cheaper storage. So we're certainly going to see an explosion of data and also a corresponding need to store, retrieve, and analyze this data. The challenge will be, how do we actually analyze and research non-structured data? It's always been relational structured data for the most part. So that's a challenge. How do I link, you know, a customer's picture and with a note, with an SMS text, with a invoice or any other experience that the customer may have in the organization? And then with the explosion of mobile devices, whether it's a smartphone or an iPad, we are seeing a large increase in the need for a culture of always being on and always being connected. I mean, certainly Facebook and applications like that have been a catalyst in that area. But there is an expectation with the Gen Y's of being always on and always connected. It doesn't really matter what method or medium they use to connect. So the challenge for us as an organization, a software development organization, is to make sure we have applications that allow for this shift in culture and the need to consume data wherever, whenever.
What trends are you then seeing with deployment? And I think you've already talked about this already, but to a certain extent. And is the movement towards the cloud becoming the default choice?
Undoubtedly, SaaS, or cloud, as we call it, has changed the conventional licensing model. But besides the licensing alone, it really fosters an engagement strategy around ease of use, always being on, paying for what I consume, and the relevance of the GUI to whatever I want to do at that particular moment of time. For example, Facebook's great example here, where its interfaces really makes it easy for people to communicate and engage with whoever they would like to and whatever community they want to be communicating to at that time. So that deployment option changes the way people like to integrate with the system. And what I'd like to say, SaaS is certainly, the concept of SaaS is certainly improving the licensing model or changing the licensing model. More importantly, it is propagating this culture of being able to access my system wherever I am, whenever I want, and whatever I want to do. That itself is supporting the Gen Y trend of wanting to be communicating and broadcasting my activities and whatever I'm doing to a specific audience at any given time.
Now, looking or targeting at the senior leadership that's out there in IT, what should CIOs be considering when they are tasked with evaluating a CRM solution?
So the good news is that CIOs are now being tasked with evaluating a CRM solution. For a while there, it was a line of business app that only the sales department or the marketing department wanted, and somebody in IT was assigned to supporting them. But today, CRM has become a core business need, a core application that businesses must have. So right after you get your accounting system up, the next thing's your email, and then your CRM. So that's the good news. The single largest challenge the CIO has is trying to understand what the value process is in selecting the CRM. He needs to understand what the business direction is in terms of customer acquisition strategy, customer management strategy, customer development strategies. Those are continually changing and will continually evolve. Once he has a clear understanding of that, and I cannot stress the importance of making sure he gets that right, or him and his team gets that right, not only what it is today, but what it would evolve to, after that they can start tackling things like which solution, how do I deploy it, what do I want to pay for it, how is it going to work with my existing infrastructure, and so on and so forth. Making sure that the customer process remains smooth, easy, and will evolve is probably the single largest thing that a CIO needs to pay attention to when he goes out to select a CRM solution.
Everybody hears about this, right? Facebook, Twitter, and so on. So how has the growth of social media influenced the direction of CRM technology?
So this question actually leads to, or it follows on from the one you've already asked, as in what should be in the CIO's mind when he goes about selecting a CRM solution. There's a lot of hype about social media, and as you say, the names that you use, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, these are all contributing to this hype. Fundamentally, social media has increased the amount of content available to a prospect or a customer when making a buying decision. Because of social media, he now has additional resources available to him when making a choice. This is the status quo. As a CRM practitioner, a business needs to incorporate such content, delivering whatever media it wants to use and whatever medium it uses in its strategy of customer acquisition, customer retention, or customer development. And as a CRM vendor, it's important for us to be able to allow these medium and technologies to be integrated into the CRM process. This integration can take the shape of a built-in capability and feature when we design the application from the ground up, or as basic as an integration between two applications that the user gets to benefit of when they conduct their CRM process. We absolutely believe that technologies like filtering and lead scoring and opportunity management will be impacted by the influence of social media and how that drives a buyer's decision.
Most solutions are available through mobile devices as well. So do you see this trend growing, and how?
Oh, absolutely. The smartphone and any associated media web app is the most influential shift in this day and age. Just this morning, I heard of a pilot program in the Toronto Zoo where they're actually going to let a group of orangutans use FaceTime on an iPad to communicate with one another. It's the first of a program to foster primate playdates. Never heard of this. It was shocking. I actually had to stop and listen to this again. But if the use of technology has reached the stage where we can get an orangutan to actually begin going on a date using FaceTime, that is certainly an outlying example of the propagation of this capability. So, like I said, you can't get more basic than that. So similarly, we, who are supposedly the more advanced cousin, will be using this technology to improve our customer engagement and our buying process and our selling process. Wherever this technology helps, we are going to start using it to improve our experience. Undoubtedly, this will be the future of how individuals interact with organizations for whatever they want to purchase and or sell.
Vivek, we've been talking about a fairly complex scenario in a sense that you have all of this social media activity occurring, and you have all these multitude of devices out there, such as smartphones and so on. So this must create some data security issues. What are they, and how can they be resolved?
So I touched upon one of them already. The fact is that there is going to be a lot of unrelated and asynchronous data out there. And as a CIO, there are two challenges, basically. One is to make sure that I have a handle on how much of data, and I control the explosion to some extent. Granted, some of this is beyond my physical control, but nevertheless, I got to have some rules, guidelines, and policies on people within the organization and people communicating with the organization and how I treat that data. On the other hand, it's going to be how can I actually analyze that data and bring things like analysis back to the organization so we are being more efficient in our prospect and customer engagement strategy. Both of these are huge challenges. And there's some advancing being made in both areas, but nevertheless, it is something that is on most CIOs' mind on how they actually deal with A, size of data, B, the security around data. There are some standards coming through on this, but because we're talking about different devices and we're talking about different protocols, it is going to be a challenge for organizations to deal with this. However, the good news is there is significant communication happening between government regulators, both nationally and internationally, software developers, device manufacturing organizations on these issues. So it's being dealt with right now.
I guess this brings to mind words like big data when you're talking about all of this data out there and finding some a means of mining, analyzing, and getting some good intelligence out of it.
Yep, it is a big, big, big issue.
Now, we have this other question, and that is there barriers to entry for smaller organizations? And then as a follow-up, what sort of IT infrastructure and resources do you see have to be in place as a minimum for these smaller businesses?
So the good news is there isn't any barrier for smaller organizations. The cost of infrastructure, the advent of virtualization, web technologies, device technologies, these are all things that have come screaming down from a price perspective. And as a result, anybody should be able to do this. There isn't much you need in terms of infrastructure and resources anymore. There are models where you can outsource your entire IT infrastructure and the management thereof to a third-party organization for a monthly fee. Huge advances in things like, you know, Google Docs and data storages to the Amazon Cloud, Microsoft Azure, Office 365. These are all things that are gradually going to propagate the culture of paying for what I consume at a manageable bite-sized chunk. And I can, apparently, you should be able to switch off and switch on based on what your business need is. Hopefully, you've done sufficient analysis at the front end so you don't have to make too many changes as things evolve. So today I believe any organization can set itself up and focus on the business of doing business without worrying about the back-end IT infrastructure resources needs that they would have 5 or 10 years ago.
We're now going to shift gears a bit and go into a bit of your background. And because you have this just a fantastic history of success, and we want to mine some of that experience. So Vivek, can you detail your major prior roles and then some shareable lessons you've learned from those roles that the audience will find valuable?
I'm going to try. I hope they find it valuable. So prior to this, I worked as the managing director for our EMEA operation based out of the UK, selling into all of Europe, Africa, and all the way to India. And prior to that, I worked in Paris for a competitor, selling software solutions around CRM and business applications around business intelligence. I've worked for Sony. I've worked for what is now Business Objects, or currently an SAP company. I have a wide experience in consumer as well as business intelligence and CRM software technologies. So some of the key things I've learned is that the walls are coming down, by which I mean it used to be geographic distances used to be a reason for different models and different ways of communicating and conducting commerce. That is now flattened considerably. It is not a surprise to walk into a room right now and be having a conversation with people who've had different experiences but have one common goal, which is earning a buck, selling something or buying something. Second thing I've learned is that it takes time to do things. This is what the human brain and the human, philosophy takes a little bit longer than technology allows us to do, to adopt to these things. That's probably a reason why you see people at my age being a little bit less adept at using technologies like Facebook and Twitter as compared to 20-year-olds and even now teenagers. And the third thing is that in general, there are more good people on this planet than bad. Just I've lived in 8 different countries and worked in 8 different countries, and I find for the most part, people want good rather than evil. So in today's political climate, in today's ideological climate, there is a sense of, you know, good versus bad. But my personal experience has been that the good overlaps the bad considerably. Does that help answer the question a little bit, Stephen?
Yeah, it's a great sort of insight, because you've got this, again, amazing history of success in so many regions of the world, and you'll have that very unique insight. I'd like to extend that question now to your current role and some lessons you've learned from what you're currently doing.
So my current role is the president of Maximizer Software, and as such, I like to think I am responsible for the overall well-being of my organization and the employees thereof, and also to make sure that our organization brings significant value to any organization that invests in our core technology. I have taken that as my personal mission and mandate at Maximizer Software, and I'm working hard to make sure that the rest of my organization plays by those rules. Some of the lessons that I've brought forward from all this experience is, first and foremost, believe that most people want good rather than are necessarily negative or evil in their thinking. The second is, spend more time being positive than being negative. It is human nature to dwell on the negativism that exists in an organization and why things went bad and so on and so forth. But my personal belief is, you dedicate a certain amount of time for it, get that done, complete that, and now focus on the positive. The more positive people that you can focus yourself around or surround yourself with, the better the health of your organization. Another lesson that I learned is, things take time. Again, like I said, human nature cannot necessarily maintain the same momentum as technology wants us to do. But for the right, making sure you have the right solution, the right answer to a business situation or a problem, is worth more than trying to ram through a solution. What else? I certainly am impressed with the way business in North America, or business in general, has responded to the current economic challenge. I mean, it's been quite a rough ride for anybody who sells anything or buys anything in the last 2.5 years, especially in the North American geography. But nevertheless, it's impressive to see how we are collectively being resilient towards those challenges as they face us.
Vivek, those are great insights from your history. Now we're going to shift gears again, and I'm going to sort of open this question up to something that's a little bit broader, and that is sort of the attitudes of CIOs and CTOs. So can you share your deep insights regarding discussions that are occurring on emerging technologies between CIOs versus CTOs? And the parts I'd like you to talk about would be technology to grow revenue versus technology to increase efficiencies, the impact of business driving the technology decisions, technology perspectives from the customer's point of view, and on the CIO side, are they becoming innovation officers?
So those are very very good topics, Stephen. I think the single largest thing is that business is now squarely driving technology. It used to be technology was driving business, but I feel that I've been in the space for about 22 years, overall, we've come back to the customer and the customer relationship is king in making a decision on every single thing we should do from a technology perspective. If it's not helping either improve the relationship or increase the number of customers or improving customer satisfaction, it should not be on the technology roadmap of any organization. Yes, there's a legacy of us software types making something that we think is the best thing on earth and everybody needs to have it, but even our CTOs are being challenged to make sure they are delivering value on a continual basis to an organization. So some of it is probably the probably being led by the increase in social media and the expression of the value people want from their interaction with technology in those media. So to some extent, business is driving technology as well. In the point around technology perspectives from the customer's point of view, I think I spoke to that in as much as if it's not giving the customer prospect additional value, then there isn't really much need for that technology. We see that happening in areas like the marketplace on Apple or the Google marketplace or even the Microsoft marketplace for that matter. If you don't have an application that brings sufficient value to your user, you just don't get bought. You drop off over time, you disappear as a player. So you need to make sure that there's sufficient value in there. With respect to the CIO becoming the chief innovation officer, I think there is some truth to that. It's probably more prevalent in more advanced thinking organizations, more in the B2C area than the B2B, mostly because, social media again drives what a consumer thinks, and that should drive the customer experience and therefore all the technologies that go to speak to the customer experience. Technology to grow revenue versus technology to increase efficiencies, I think the both need to work hand in hand. The last 2.5 years have taught us that customer relationships and customer experiences are more important, or if not equally important, than going out and getting more customers. Because of the advent of social media, because of the opportunity the prospect has to analyze in depth before he buys anything, and the concept of recommendations from key influencers, friends and family, those kind of things. It is really, really important to maintain the right efficiency in your organization so that the ongoing experience is good. That also helps, it's a funny thing, but that also helps in actually driving the revenue growth. Another area that we're beginning to see now is the CIO is, or the whoever holds that position in an organization, is also getting involved significantly in how a customer is acquired and how revenue is generated from that customer. Such kind of thinking was kind of the purview of very larger organizations that had the resources to spend on analyzing that data. But simple organizations now are simple as in smaller organizations now are focusing hard on, lifetime value of a customer, value per transaction, profit per transaction, profit per employee. Those kind of things are now making itself known in medium-sized and small organizations as well. So whoever holds the role of CIO or back-end infrastructure and systems in an organization is really being called upon for his expertise and his perspective when customer engagement strategies are being created.
Well, those are some excellent insights in terms of CIOs and CTOs. And in fact, I'll see if I can get some of this into some of the periodicals that are out there. Now, the second question will then mine the very senior executive role you have. You are president of Maximizer, a leading CRM provider, and therefore you'll have some experience in terms of governance and board insights. So I'd like to get some of your views on this, like on what the board is thinking on things like their top three concerns as it relates to the integration of technology and business. Who do board members rely on within the organization? What are some of the aspects of deploying an IT governance program? And how about innovation and its impact on the organization's future success? And then finally, preparing the workforce for the future.
So from my perspective, I'll take the last one first. From my perspective, I think my experience, and I've reported to a couple of boards now, one a smaller board of 6 members, the other a much larger international board of 12 members. I think the last point of preparing the workforce for the future is less of a board issue. It's more of an operational issue in as much as the board relies on the executive and his management team to ensure that we have the right workforce for the future. However, it is tied in to the overall strategy, and to some extent, the board has responsibility for that overall strategy. I have to say that, again, the events of the last few years have put a significant question mark into the value a board actually brings to an organization. And in some cases, it's been of questionable value. I mean, we see this in all the financial, large financial organizations and that have gone bankrupt when they had a full-fledged board earning lots of money and being privy to significant transactions being conducted. They haven't really implemented their brand of objectivity, let's say, in allowing the management to run their operation. So there is a bit of a question mark of a value of the value a board brings, and in some cases, how independent they are in their objectivity. I would still say the three main concerns of a board is to make sure that the investment generates sufficient level of value. First and foremost, it is aligned to the strategy of the business. Second, it is actually generating value in terms of efficacy or increase in top line. So those continue to be the concerns on a board. Who do the board members rely on an organization? I think the chief executive is still the decision maker, or the key interface, I'm sorry, between the board and the operation. But more and more, we're seeing the CFO and to some extent the CMO, chief marketing officer, and the CIO coming to the table. Less and less in my experience from the CIO's perspective, but certainly more and more in the CMO and the CFO. So this is indicative of the board wanting to have a better picture of what's going on in an organization in terms of customer retention, customer acquisition, and making sure we make the right levels of profit exist within the organization. Deploying an IT governance program is always a challenge. I mean, business continuity is a concern there. Data security is a concern there. Sharing of information, especially in the CRM world, is important too. I mean, one of the largest requests we get, or questions we get really, is around the area of what happens to my customer information if a sales rep leaves? Will he take it and go to a competitor, and then what can I do about it? So some of that is controlled through the, you know, HR policies of an organization, and some of it can be controlled through the data security and the data access models. We are coming up around challenges where, you know, security and data rights are battling against efficacy of the employee in using the systems. But organizations are working hard to try to address those things right now. It never is fun or easy to deploy a IT governance program. Most people refer or view that as a big brother coming down to watch what we're doing. My personal experience has been that it is better to actually get a consensus within the organization of the value of a governance program before rolling it out. To some extent, CRM is that kind of a governance program because it does record interaction between employees and customers, employees and prospects. And often it is organizations that have a wider conversation with their team about the value of CRM that has some success in rolling out that as a governance program.
What are the disruptive technologies and how will they have impact?
In the last 10 years, there have been a significant amount of disruption, so to speak. From my perspective, I think the single largest event has been the explosion of data caused by mobile and mobile devices. We're seeing bandwidths being impacted. We're seeing cheaper and cheaper cellular programs or programs from the cellular providers. We're seeing networks getting into the world of stores and you know, purchase points for various things more above and beyond the phone, so to speak. And we're seeing them trying to enter the corporate world more and more aggressively as the desire to control and view data increase. From a software application side, we're seeing things like open source, things like web apps, and just the reliance on web in general. With that, you're now seeing, for example, there's something like, I don't know, 500,000 apps on the iTunes that you can download from anywhere between $0 to $9.99. We're seeing Apple now actually having a model that gives them a share of that. So that's increasing as well. We're seeing Google kind of get into that game. We're seeing Microsoft getting into that game. So more and more, we're seeing larger organizations stepping back and actually finding new revenue streams through promoting a referral type model, so to speak. And I think that's going to change things as well. A good examples of this in the consumer space are things like Craigslist or Groupons, where with the Groupon model, where you can actually, you know, sell whatever you want through a defined community that has a specific need for what you want. And you no more have to do the, you know, worldwide blast or the spray and pray approach, as I call it. And we're seeing those kind of things drive the future. Again, I referred to this earlier, the need to be able to search and report or analyze asynchronous or non-relational data is something that will disrupt the way things people behave and interact with in the world of commerce.
We've touched on some of this already throughout this interview, but maybe we can sort of maybe do a review and maybe add some new ideas. But what specific challenges and opportunities should IT workers and businesses embrace today and into the future?
So my view is that the majority of the innovation is going to be around data. There is some level of fatigue, so to speak, in terms of the application and what it does for you. For example, I perform a function of selling software to an organization. Well, I've got all I need in terms of what my application can do. Innovation is not going to come from a more features being added to the solution if those features are not relevant to my process. If you're asking me to rechange my process every time you come up with a software addition, I'm probably not going to be motivated or even inclined to do so. However, if we can find a way to let the data that we already have and the future data collection models provide the intelligence we need so that we are actually having a relevant conversation with a particular buyer or a particular organization, it will help drive success. IT practitioners should remember that. A great example here at Maximizer, we're looking to make sure that if you communicate with anybody in our team, we're going to have a conversation with you that's relevant to your business. We absolutely do not engage with anybody on a more generalist model as we would 5 or 6 years ago. Example, if you're in the security selling business and you show up on our website and indicate an interest in CRM, the conversation our sales and marketing organization will have with you is going to be all about what you do from a securities reselling perspective or a management perspective or a compliancy perspective. We're not going to tell you things that are absolutely irrelevant to you or may not add value to your selling process. That, for me, is an evolution of a selling model or a sophistication of a selling model that in the past was relevant only to verticalized applications and those sales forces, but it's not anymore. It's any organization has to have a conversation in a context and in a method that is relevant to that particular buyer. IT practitioners should pay attention to that. It's about trying to get verticalized in your approach without necessarily investing in a verticalized application.
Computing has been around now for about, 50 years, and, you know, there's practitioners out there, and they're working in different disciplines or domains within computing. And I know that IT workers often look at other professions like those in engineering or accounting and medicine, law, and so on, and they say, gee, those people are, they're in a recognized profession, and they have demonstrated professional development, they adhere to a code of ethics, they have recognized credentials, some of the credentials, other are non-licensed, others are licensed, depending on the profession. What do you feel about computing being a recognized profession?
I think it should be. I think more work needs to be done at various levels, global, national, regional. I think it's a bit of a risk that all industries, all bar none, are now heavily reliant on computing, either from a operational perspective or an analytical perspective or a compliancy perspective, and to not have standards, to not have standards that are at par with any other industry or any other profession is probably a risk. We do have titles. We do have, you know, some levels of certification. Majority of it seems to be driven by software vendors or business discipline vendors, but I don't think it is sufficient. I think additional work needs to be done to let people know that when they're dealing with a IT professional or a software vendor or a computing professional, that he or she has been processed through a model like, let's say, a chartered accountant or a certified general accountant or a doctor, I mean, to some level, so that there is some level of standard ethics and professionalism being brought to the role. Having said that, it really is difficult because a lot of the value of computing comes in the creativity of the individual. And a lot of that creativity could be suppressed or even controlled to some extent if you put a ring fence of standardization and regulations around that. So, and that's probably a reason why it's not yet standardized, but I feel we're getting there. The more and more where we go to these timeshare type models where more and more people are selling pieces of their infrastructure out to various organizations, the more there is a need for some level of standardization and regulations around that.
Well, it's interesting. In your response, Vivek, it sounds like you're talking about quality assurance, risk mitigation, some protection for the public and for the clients if you're adhering to a code of ethics. And if you're doing continual professional development, then there's this assurance that you have a certain level of quality and you're meeting certain standards in your work. We're down to our last two questions, and this one is going to sort of look at all of the experiences you have or have had over the years, and you must have some interesting stories to share, maybe something amusing, surprising, unexpected, amazing from all of the success history and all of the travel.
Oh, that's certainly a question I wasn't expecting. I don't know. I mean, I've been in various places around the world selling various things, and I think one of my most enjoyable experiences was actually going to one of a conference in Hawaii with Sony. And it was funny. I mean, we had to take a bunch of our, you know, distributors to Hawaii for a week, and part of that trip was a submarine adventure. And they took you down in one of these, I guess about 30 people sat in one of the submarines, and they took you down to the ocean floor, and you got to see scuba divers actually feed the fish there, and we had these big glass screens through which you could see what was going on. It was an amazing experience because you had a group of 30 people who have never shared a unique experience together, excepting buying and selling Sony equipment. And it was interesting. And what was funny there was I was at that time I was in deep discussions with a large distributor to try to get a significant order for the next year. And that conversation was happening, you know, as we met in the hotel room and we had breakfast together and we walked all the way to the pier and got into the boat that took us to the submarine and went down. And we finally consummated the deal at the bottom of the ocean. And he was actually there and we were talking to each other and I'm saying, you know what? This is the only time we'll ever get to do a deal at the bottom of the Pacific Ocean. So let's shake our hands on it and move ahead. And I found that to be funny. I found that to be unique, and I still haven't had the opportunity to replicate that. So that was great. And the other one I had was also with one of my customers is Gold Corp, and what they do is manage mines. And as one of the treats, so to speak, for us suppliers to them, they took us down a mine in Johannesburg. And it was amazing because we went down anywhere close to 1.5 to 2 miles vertically down into the bowels of the earth. And we got off this container-like thing, walked out, and there are probably this huge cavernous pathways there, roadways even. It was large enough. It was about 15 feet in height. It was large enough for them to drive golf carts around. And it was a full life. There were three shifts of people who worked 8 hours at a time underground. And that was another extremely amazing experience to know that while I'm asleep, there's a bunch of people down under the earth there searching for gold. So those were that's the two that come to mind right now.
Those are interesting stories. I'm just thinking survivalists would probably want to be down 2 miles or, you know, 3 or 4 kilometers down into the earth if there's any impending problems.
Yeah, you know, and it's interestingly, they speak a different language there. I mean, you got people, this is in Johannesburg, and you got people from all over Africa working in those mines. You got people from South America, you got people from India, China working in those mines, and they just communicate to a completely different language.
I can tell it's an amazing experience because I can can sense the excitement as you even still talk about it.
Yeah, it was almost 8 years ago. I still thought it was great.
Well, we're down to our very last question, and you know, we've explored things like the value of CRM and, you know, changes in the marketplace and how CRM could be adapted to those changes that are occurring in the environment and decision processes that CIOs can take in terms of evaluating CRM and integrated it into their operations. And we also talked about, you know, some of the lessons from your background that you shared, and also some of the conversations that are occurring amongst CIOs and CTOs in terms of what they're doing, and also conversations amongst board members. You also shared your insights about technologies and challenges and opportunities for practitioners and businesses, and even this question on professionalism, just, you know, creating a career out of computing, and finally sharing some stories. So we explored many, many avenues, and in this question, I'm sort of opening it up to you. What questions did I miss, and what questions should I have asked you, so, and then what would be your answers?
Well, actually, a question I've always had is, what role does your industry seek to play in the evolution of this computing model? My personal experience has been there are few publications and professionals in this industry that actually foster an environment of growth. Most are reporting on what's happening, and some are even focused on the sensationalism that happens with, you know, acquisitions and mergers and demises of people and organizations. But I think it's important to understand that there is a large responsibility the media plays in governing our thinking. And what were your thoughts on what your industry can do to help us improve the professionalism around the world of computing? Not sure if you were expecting that kind of question, but
I see. So you reversed it again. So you're asking me the question in terms of the role that media can play, and
yeah, that's right. I mean, what are you guys talking about? What are you guys thinking about? So we're held to a sense of professionalism and value for the customer.
I see. So, I mean, I could see media being a platform to drive innovation, perhaps, by creating forums and discussions amongst industry leaders like yourself, where you can expose ideas, and those ideas can be adopted by business and industry, governments and academia, and other media channels, too. So it could be an educational forum to spread the ideas that are occurring in industry to a broad audience, and to get more and more people involved, including getting government support or other industry support. Media can also play a partnership with industry and business leaders like yourself, again, to ensure that we have enough of a skilled workforce entering into technology to drive innovation and entrepreneurship and growth of not only regional GDP, but national GDP and world GDP as well. And also looking at issues in the developing nations, and again, spawn discussions of innovative solutions being that platform to provide those solutions to different parts of the world, including within our country. I guess it's sort of being part of that conversation, ensuring that conversation occurs, ensuring that there's some metrics at the end of that conversation so that you do have some deliverables and results that will move the whole industry forward. That's my thinking in terms of your question there.
And thank you for answering it the way you did, because that's exactly what I think needs to happen. You know, there's too much of reporting. Sorry, and I'm just being candid here, but there's too much of here's what happened here, and it's almost reporting on instances that actually happened. But allowing us to be more accountable and bringing good value is something that I'd like to encourage and see more done of. You know, so thank you for answering that way. I think that's a good answer to my question.
Okay, do you have any other questions that you thought should be asked, but you would like to answer yourself as well?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Okay, Vivek, well, I really enjoyed this session today. And again, you know, you are a global leader, a thought leader, and executive who has this great history of success, and you've shared many of your insights with our audience. And I know your schedule is demanding, so thank you for coming in today to share your deep experiences with our audience.
And thank you very much for having us again on behalf of Maximizer Software.
I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and this concludes our exclusive interview with Vivek Thomas, President Maximizer and top-ranking global executive.